Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Andy Choi Show, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. For the next 60 minutes, I'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight's guests will be actor Michael Wright and James Como of the Beatles tribute band The PJ Daytrippers. But first, our shameless plugs. For those of you who haven't read my anti-aging book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, there are no time like the present. It's always the right time to stay young and get healthy. Also, if you're going to live a long time, you might as well enjoy it, so check out my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, on how to improve men's sexual performance through exercise. Both are available on Amazon.com and my website, AndyTroy.com. Remember that if you bring any of my books to any of my events, I'll be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, our next event will be our annual holiday party. The date is Friday, December 17th from 6 to 11 p.m. The location is Catra, 217 Bowery at Rivington. Admission is free. There'll be lots of surprises. It'll be a great night, so come join us. The details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, tastingnyc.com. The Andy Choi Show is a group on Facebook that contains links to previous shows as well as pictures of all our past guests. Check it out by punching The Andy Choi Show into your Facebook browser. My good friend and producer, John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, has a CD called La Voce Mia. Order your copy today at johnnymandolin.com or call E. Rossi at 212-226-2954, and they'll hook you up. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods or services to our vast listening audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. Okay, we're now going to bring on our first guest, someone who I've been a fan of for many years. I greatly enjoyed his performance in a very gritty TV show called Oz, where he played Omar White. He also was featured in a movie called The Five Heartbeats and many other films and TV shows. We'd like to welcome to the show the legendary Michael Wright. How are you, Michael?
Andy, I am just splendid and all the better for being here with you. Thank you so much. And my God, I can't tell you how my sexuality is improving as a result of
just from hearing about my DVD.
Oh, just from hearing about it. Oh, I'm flexing, buddy.
It has that sound. It has that sort of effect on people, I've been told.
No doubt.
So, what was your first time on stage like, Michael?
That's an interesting question, Andy. My first time on stage was courageous, going out and about thing. But I've had my most terrifying moment on stage. That's when, you know, as we say as actors, we go up, you know, and that's when you forget your lines, as it were.
Really? Yeah. Well, has that happened to you often?
No, it didn't happen to me often. It happened to me one time. But since I studied with Lee Strasberg.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. I studied with Lee Strasberg. Remember the Actors Studio?
Sure, of course. The Lee Strasberg Institute is a very famous place.
The Lee Strasberg Theater Institute, right. Yeah. Well, you know, Lee always had a bit of advice. You know, if you forget your lines, you just take a stroll across the stage, you know. And, you know, nobody knows what's going on beyond and behind the actor's mask, you know. And ultimately, it'll come to you. You know, I mean, it's also the other thing, too. You know, I mean, if you need or you have a moment where you need to cry in a scene, well, you sort of just turn your face upstage, you know, and you pull a hair in your nose. And, oh, my God, if anything will make you cry, pulling a nasal hair will make you cry.
Well, I know that I was a big Yankee fan growing up, and at the time, watching Yankee games used to make me cry, but fortunately, they got a lot better, so.
I don't know. Were you a Reggie Jackson fan?
Well, I was going back before that. Reggie, they were already good again, but I was like, I'm talking like the early 70s was a little rough.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I came up, you know, or at least, you know, my early days were Mandel and, you know, all that sort of stuff like that. But of course, you know, I mean, there were those wonderful days in the 70s too. I mean, where you had Mr. October, and come on. I mean, you couldn't lack for drama.
No. Well, once they got Reggie, they were back in business.
Well, there you are.
Okay, so at what age did you realize that you wanted to be an actor? Was this something you wanted from childhood or what?
No, it wasn't that sort of thing. I think it was around 16 or 17 or when I realized I couldn't do anything else.
Practical purposes.
Yes,
very interesting.
Yeah. I had no other recourse.
Well, it's like Roger Daltrey, I know, once said he had two choices, like be a singer or like be a gang member, so he went with singer.
Well, there you are, the sage Roger Daltrey, of course. You know, I mean, if we don't follow his philosophy, I mean, who else's will we? Nonetheless, it was one of those instances where I wanted to do a great many other things. I wanted to write, I wanted to paint, I wanted to dance. I wanted to do all kinds of extraordinary things, you know, as an artist, you know, and I wanted to be a poet. But I discovered that if I acted, I could do and be all of those things.
That's a very practical viewpoint. I like that.
That's one way of looking at it.
Now, speaking of dancing, I just this weekend watched The Five Heartbeats, which was kind of your biggest moment in some ways. That was a great film.
I don't know. It's one of the films that I'm known best for. But.
Yes, you were the star of that film, of the band. And you showed some good moves up there. So you said you were a dancer. How much did that pay off in that movie?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't a dancer, actually.
Well, you wanted to be a dancer.
And I was the most non-musical person of all of those actors and all of those persons that were in that film, actually. You know, but we do what we do according to the exigencies of time and circumstances. And so I worked very, very hard, as it were. You know,
I loved your entry when you came sliding up on the stage that time, when you were running from the gamblers.
I loved the knee pads even more.
Speaking of practical. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It made that entry a lot more practical and a lot more accountable. Actually.
How many takes does it take to get something like that just right?
It's not a matter of takes. You know, I mean, I think it's a matter of intent. You know, and I really don't know how many takes it does, you know, but I mean, you know, you've got a master and you've got your various angles and your various, modes of coverage and so forth. So, I mean, you just try to get it right every time that you do it, you know, and you try to do it right the first time. And in that, you try to do it right 3 weeks in advance so that you've worked it out, you know. So that every time, or so that when you finally arrive at the moment of execution, it's sort of a foregone conclusion. It's sort of a fait accompli, if you will. Ooh, you know, I've worked it out. I know what it is, and I've done it. You know, and it's like Hitchcock. You know, when he would arrive at the set, you know, he wouldn't look through the lens because he'd worked it all out and just knew what it was all about. And he said, "Roll it."
Were you a big Hitchcock fan?
Of course. Who wasn't? And what student of film would not admit it? You know, come on. What student of film, you know, I mean, all the exes, again, of genius in film, would not acknowledge that they're a big Hitchcock fan? I mean, that's the way film was made.
Now, you mentioned a good point before that, you like to have it together 3 weeks before you shoot. How far in advance do you get the script for a movie like The Five Heartbeats?
Well, it's an interesting thing. There's a long story about that, or rather interesting story about that. The film had initially had been being written for another actor whose name won't be mentioned.
Who will remain nameless.
Who will remain nameless, but he's an incredibly big actor. You know, who's unstoppable these days. Yeah. But nonetheless, Robert Townsend came to visit my mom's restaurant, which was Jezebel Restaurant on 45th Street and 9th Avenue several years ago. And we got to talking, and he went back to my apartment and visited with me and saw a film that I'd made in Japan, which was called Bedtime Eyes, which was about a love story, you know, about a Japanese nightclub singer who was hopelessly in love with an American, black American sailor who had ultimately gone AWOL, you know. And Robert was so, well, enthralled with the performance that he said, well, I've been writing this film for well, I love what you've been doing in this, and I love what you've done in this, and I'm going to finish this film, and I'll be in touch with you. And I totally forgot about it. But then 6 months later, my phone rings, and there it is, Townsend on the line, saying, I'm ready to do this film. and I agreed to do it. Interestingly enough, a week later, George Jackson and Doug McHenry, who were producing New Jack City, came to me with that film and offered me whichever role I wanted to play in that. You know, either it had been the cop or, you know, the bad guy that Wesley Snipes ended up playing. And I said, well, I've already made a commitment to Robert, you know, and there was something of a conflict. And the conflict only consisted of maybe a week or so. But the persons and the producers at that studio just would not agree to resolve that conflict. And so, therefore, I had to go ahead and make the one film rather than the two films at the time. Well, which is just an interesting little piece of hagiography, if you will.
Well, in regard to the Five Heartbeats, someone just wrote in, great movie, Michael was great. So the audience is a fan of yours as well.
I've got to love the audience.
Yes. Well, we're going to start on this, and then we'll get back to it after the break, because we want to talk about my favorite work of yours, which was Omar White in Oz. Now, what was it like working on that show? Because everyone in Hollywood was in that show.
Well, you know, everyone was in that show. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And Oz was just an amazing experience. I mean, it was like, again, like summer camp for actors, you know. I mean, and, you know, the hiatuses were so long, you know, that we couldn't wait to get back.
How long was it between seasons?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was about 6 to 8 months, you know. But when we got back together, I mean, whoa, it was like, wow, here we are all back in summer camp again together, you know. And there were like 30 principals on that show.
At any given time.
At any given time. And it was, how shall I put it? It was a prison soap opera.
And they had to tone, they normally you might want to make things look more violent or less, but that was the most violent thing I've ever seen.
My friend,
everyone died in that.
My friend Oz is the only show where I would flip open the script and go through it and go, you want me to do what? What? Okay.
You were a very, very edgy character in that.
Well, yeah. Omar, Tom Fontana gave me a wonderful opportunity to sort of just be this sort of unallied character. You know, I mean, you had all of these characters, various characters that were connected to or associated with these various ethnic groups and so on and so forth. One of the things that Tom and I understood, or one of the understandings that existed between he and I, he being the Kingpin, was that, well, this character, you know, would have no determined association. So I had a great deal of freedom to do and behave in a great many ways, you know, that a lot of the other characters on the show didn't. And I was incredibly, and I remain incredibly grateful to Tom Fontana for that. You know, but I must tell you that Oz was a remarkable thing. I mean, it's the only show where you would, like, look at the last page of the script, you know, rather than the first, you know, because you wanted to know either one of two things. Had you been fired or had you quit?
Or was anybody left alive?
Oh, you wanted you wanted to know if you were dead. You know, you'd look at the last page and see if your character was dead. But there were two ways that I would have been off of the show. And one way was if, indeed, you know, the producers and the writers had determined that my character was killed, in which case, well, obviously, I was fired. But the other way was if it was revealed to me in the last page of the script that my character were gang raped, in which case I quit.
Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to go to a commercial break. We're going to come back with Oz and lots of other great stuff that that Michael's done. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Marianne Morrison. Join me, uncensored and live, with entertaining and provocative guests from celebrities to world-renowned entrepreneurs with hot topics and hot talk. Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, high-definition digital radio broadcasting to the world, only on the Chandani Broadcasting Network.
Chandani. Hello, my name is Anthony Teresa, owner and producer of Blue Night Recording Studio in beautiful Orange County, California, just outside Los Angeles. As a guitarist, vocalist, bassist, session player, producer, and engineer, I have either played or recorded on over 400 CD projects. Let me tell you, it's not easy to record your own music. My goal is to help you to be the best you can be behind the mic and in the tracking room. We'll get the best possible sounds from your voice and instruments. Do you need musicians? I've got them. The top session players in Southern California and Los Angeles. Let's make your recording project a reality. You can contact me by phone at 949-338-0293. That's 949-338-0293. Or contact me at email at catduo@earthlink.net. Looking forward to hearing from you. Take care and have a great week.
Hi, this is Vino, owner and chef of Giovanna's Restaurant. You are broadcasting live from Giovanna's on Ginternet Broadcast Network. High definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
You're doing good. Okay, we're back with Michael slash Omar slash Carlisle, a man who has been many people, and I think I mentioned to you that I saw you play the role of Carlisle this weekend.
Amazing.
Who reminded me, as I mentioned, a lot of Omar, and you said you saw some parallels there, right?
Well, I think a lot of Omar was derivative, as I might have suggested to you, you know, with respect to Carlisle. You know, I mean, one of those sort of marginalized, socially marginalized kinds of characters. Interestingly enough, Carlisle was the film in which I cut my critical teeth in, if you will.
You cut a few things in that movie, actually.
Well, I killed a lot of people in that. And, I stabbed a lot of people in that. And, well, they might have had that in common. Nonetheless, that was a film directed by Robert Altman. And it starred... myself, Matthew Modine, David Alan Greer, and we were all nominated and then eventually awarded the Golden Lion for Best Acting.
As a group, which is unusual,
right? At the Venice Film Festival, yes, it was. It was something that was incredibly unusual, you know, but I guess, you know, they couldn't boil it down as to, you know, who was crawling over whose back. I don't know, but I think they were all crawling over my back. Anyway, just joking.
Well, that was a very interesting performance. The whole thing was shot in, like, one location.
Yeah. It was incredibly sort of...
like in a
barracks. It was shot in a barracks. And it was incredibly condensed, you know, and nothing. Yeah, well, and incredibly explosive. And
your character was very intense, as it was in many of the things I've seen you in, which takes me to another movie that I had forgotten you were in until I did a little research, a movie I liked a lot years ago called The Wanderers.
Well, that's my first film, actually.
Was that?
Yeah, that film was directed by Philip Kaufman, you know, of Body Snatchers fame, and... all the right stuff, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, I think that was Philip's first film, and it was based on a best-selling novel. You know, and I played Clinton Stitch, you know, who was the leader of the Del Bombers, and that was my first film where I kind of got my start.
I'm going to go back and rent that because I want to see you as a youth.
I'm ever youthful. That's my problem. They won't allow me to grow up, actually. But notwithstanding.
Now, what are you doing these days? We want to know what's coming up with you.
Here's something very fascinating. Well, I've got a couple of other films I'm working on. You know, I've got a film called The Gift that's being directed by Charles Dutton, of Charles Rock Dutton, you know, rock fame, if you will. They're also starring Jamie Hector, the fellow who's on The Wire. But what we're developing now is very interesting because Well, one of my passions is food.
I've been known to eat on occasion. Go on.
Well, you know, my mom and we've had a restaurant called Jezebel in New York over 25 years, you know, and it's very well known. I mean, everyone's come there. And I often cook there. But what we're developing, actually, is a culinary show, you know, because I speak several languages. Saya percakapan bahasa Indonesia. You know, watashi wa nihongo wa nasunakoku.
Good job. I speak some Brooklynese myself.
I know. You know, watashi wa nihongo wa nasunakoku ga dakimasu.
It all sounds like the same big, long language.
No,
what language
no,
are we talking
no.
about?
No, moi je parle français très très
That's
bien.
French. I got that.
Wait. You hablo espanol.
Well, the Spanish, I'm
So, yeah, that. We're going to sort of go around the world and hit these spots. And cook a dish here, there, and everywhere, you know.
And is this going to come with subtitles?
I don't know. We haven't actually given it a thought. You know, subtitles.
Well, you could actually cook the dish in the language of the dish.
We're just going to show a boy from Queens, you know. You know,
that would be you,
black,
I think.
A black kid from Queens who speaks 5 or 6 different languages.
Really?
Going all over the planet, you know, cooking all of these incredible things, you know. I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, bouillabaisse in France, you know, doing a couscous in Morocco, you know, where I lived in Erfurt.
You lived in Morocco?
Yes, absolutely.
For how long was that?
Or myself living with the Maasai, or myself living in Papua New Guinea, you know, with the Dani and the Azmat, or myself living in Bali as I did.
You get around there, Mike.
Well, I do. I have been around. I've been, as they say, the song goes, I've been everywhere, boy. I've been everywhere.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So what else we got coming up? We got the cooking show. Maybe any films you're working on?
We've got an amazing new film. We just went out to Los Angeles and at the Ink Spot Summit, developing films. You know, and we picked up a wonderful film, you know, called The Helix. You know, but a curmudgeonly melon farmer, you know, who's descended upon by aliens.
That would be me. I could play the lead role in that.
Well, you know, no, you could be one of those guys. But
a melon farmer?
But we're hoping that Robert Englund, who you met with us last week or 2 weeks ago at the
Horror Film Festival.
The Horror Film Festival, yeah. Robert Englund is going to be one of the players in that. That's what we're working on right now. Robert Englund, who, of course, is the guy who used to, well, you know, he's Freddy Krueger. Yeah.
But before that,
you know, he did a television series with me called V. Played a character called Willie. And he was just like the little sort of,
So you guys go back.
So we go back, and we've got a wonderful relationship, you know. Who's my boy? But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, Robert's an interesting fellow. I've seen him in a number of things.
He's very talented. He's a great, great fellow. And we're hoping, you know, that, we're not hoping, you know, we're talking.
What did you do at the Horror Film Festival, by the way? I know you had a bigger role than just hanging out. What were you, like a judge or something?
No, I don't know. I was a panelist.
A panelist,
yeah. I just hung in there with, you know, Michael Hine and everything. You know, Michael's the director of that. And, of course, you know, I'm going to be in Michael's next film.
Are you? What's the name of that? So you're going into horror. I love horror.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I love the genre.
I just saw The Human Centipede, which is a bizarre movie. Have you seen that yet?
No, I have not seen that.
You got to check that out.
Please, give me a link.
Seriously, that is like the wildest thing you'll ever see.
Man, I got to see The Human Centipede.
Some doctor connects 3 people into 1 being.
Oh, my.
And it's really something. Let me tell
it's got to be.
It's really out there.
The Human Centipede.
Yes. He connects the mouth to anus, like surgically, so that they're one long...
You're scaring me, fellow.
Then he, like, disconnects something in their knees so that they can't stand up, and they crawl around like one creature. It's really, really creepy, I have to say.
Yeah. You're terrifying me. I got to go around the block and see the guy who's got 22 skulls in his living room.
I'm scaring an actor. This is pretty good. Who does horror film? Okay, so
and that's not even a horror film.
I know you've worked with some big directors. Can you name someone who you particularly enjoyed working with?
I don't know.
Who was
Let me
good?
See. I mean, of course, you know Bob Altman. Of course, you know Sidney Pollack. You know the late Sidney Pollack, who you know directed me in the film The Interpreter. You know, which I did with Sean Penn and Nicole Kidman, you know, where I was the Dolby guy. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. He's here. It's him. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I was that guy. Okay, so, gosh.
Someone wrote in for Human Centipede. Great, sick movie. So, there's more than one of me out there. So.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you know, there have got to be a lot more Centipede fans than just you.
Yes, I'm not the only lunatic out there. But, yeah, Robert Altman, what was he like to work with?
Irascible. Say, Bob. Hey, Bob, you know what I'm going to do in this next season? He said, yo, I know what you're going to do.
What I
you're
tell you.
Do what I'm you're going to do, you know. That kind of thing. What I tell you. No, it was more like, you know, Bob, I'm getting ready to do something that's extraordinary. I'm going to flip this Carlisle thing on its ear, and I'm going to make this guy into a Harvard or Yale Don, something like that. You know, I mean, something that was totally out of David Rabe's, you know, intent. And I just took the character and made him go, like, oh, my goodness, you know, it's just about a matter of, you know, I mean, what chicken livers and hearts and all of that, you know, I don't know what the blood is about and all of that sort of thing.
I never realized you were British.
Well, lad, you don't know a lot of things about me. You don't know I'm Cockney. Well, for instance, you don't know that I'm fucking Irish as well, right? And I can do all of that sort of thing, too, you know.
You are quite the world traveler, vocally speaking.
Monsieur, I'm a long time in this thing with the language.
Okay? I'm having a hard enough time with English.
I don't know, monsieur, out. But we're having another hard time out here. We're just talking. It's fun.
So what was your most challenging role, would you say?
My most challenging role? My most challenging
role? Your most challenging role, what did you really feel?
You know what? You know what? That's interesting. The one that one role that I enjoyed the most, because I had to really, really turn it back, twist it back into what I thought the writer intended to be, was Sugar Hill.
Oh, okay.
The film I made with Wesley Snipes, which was originally written for me, you know, and it was rather operatic, and inspirationally, I used the Brothers Karamazov. It was a Dostoevskian kind of operable kind of thing for me, you know, about a dysfunctional kind of family, you know, and people were expecting something different. They were thinking that it was going to be another version of New Jack City, but no, I didn't want it to be that. Again, I said I wanted it to be Long Day's Journey into Night. I wanted it to be Eugene O'Neill. And so crushing that and twisting that and making that in every way, you know, that was consummate with my vision of what the film should have been, you know, was perhaps the most challenging thing that I've ever done. And it has cost me.
Really?
Oh, yes. It cost me career-wise. But I don't regret it for a moment because I did what I wanted to do as an artist.
He's about to sing My Way, folks.
Only Frank. Only Frank.
We have a vampire who sings My Way at some of my events, by the way. That's fascinating. Baron Misuraca. You haven't lived till you saw a vampire sing My Way. He's Wait. Sticking with Frank, I think.
I'll let him stick with it, okay? But I'll go with Frank.
Okay.
Well, nobody sings My Way like Frank.
Okay, it's been great spending quality time with Mike. We're going to go to a commercial break, and we're going to come in with James Como, and we're going to talk some Beatles. Mike, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to the Cent'anni Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital stereo.
Broadcasting to the world. Would you like to know what's going on in the Italian-American community and stay in touch, even if you don't live in Little Italy?
There's a way to do it. There's a great newspaper out called GIA, the Giornale Italo-Americano. This newspaper is distributed nationally and comes out weekly, and you can subscribe by going to their website at www.giamondo.com, that's GIAMONDO.com, or call 718-592-2196. Check out GIA for all your information on what's happening in the Italian-American community. It's published in both Italian and English. It's a great way to read and follow up and practice your Italian as well. Check out GIA on the internet at www.giamondo.com. GIA newspaper, the Italian-American newspaper for today.
Hi there, I'm Tim McGraw. One of the great things about music is how it brings people together. Kids like to hang out, listen to music, and talk about what's hot and what's not on the music scene. And playing instruments and singing provides a way for young people to get together and interact in a cooperative and respectful way. Kids who play in school ensembles understand that every part has to work together for the result to be the magical art called music. Your local school music programs provide a golden opportunity for your child to experience the rewards of learning music. Why not pay a visit to the music teacher to find out what's going on? Get your kids involved with school music.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Musical Instruments, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
This is John Campbell.
And this is Peter Tillum.
Listen to Law Talk every Wednesday night on the Chintani Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
Okay, we're now back and switching mode from Hollywood to Liverpool, I guess. With sort of Ringo Starr here, we've got James Como, who is the drummer. I have an affection for drummers. Don't get too excited, James.
Okay.
because I am a drummer myself, but he is the drummer for PJ and the Day Trippers, which is a Beatles tribute band.
That's correct.
Do you remember the first time you heard the Beatles?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I grew up with six brothers, and two of my older brothers were really into it. I must have been five, and I still can remember the black and white TV set going on and seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan and having memories of that.
Everyone's first memory of the Beatles is Ed Sullivan. It was Liberty DeVito's first memory.
Well, it was mine too. And my parents hated it. They were like, who are these guys? Loud guitars, the hair. And all the young people loved it. Absolutely loved it. Like, it was just a whole youth movement. They were just, they all looked the same. They all had the same hair, but the music was phenomenal. It just took you by storm. They just looked so at ease and happy about it. And it was like, wow, I want to do that.
Well, speaking of funny stories with the Beatles and our parents, I'll never forget my father on his ridiculous big stereo with the TV, the black and white TV with the big speakers on the side. And he used to play records on Saturday morning. And he was playing like Andy Griffith or something, singing Yesterday. And he turned to me and he said, the Beatles could never do a song like this. So, always remember that, dear old dad. Anyway, so what was your reaction? It was pretty strong, you're saying, when you first heard them, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we just loved it. From the moment we did it, I mean, our whole family is musical because of the Beatles. I mean, we all play instruments, we all sing, and I think it comes right from that point in time where we just fell in love with that. All my brothers were in bands and stuff, and so were we.
So you're a singing drummer?
Yes, I am. I mean, that because of Ringo, I wanted to do that too, so I wanted to make sure I did both.
Yeah, they turned my mic off when they saw me coming, so never had that opportunity. It's very tragic. But so what was your favorite Beatles song? Do you have one?
You know, people ask me that at shows all the time, and I give them a different answer every time because the Beatles, it's just too many great songs to pick from. But if you want one tonight, I'll say Strawberry Fields.
Okay. I'm a While My Guitar Gently Weeps
man.
Oh,
I like that one too.
That's my favorite.
That's phenomenal, too, yeah.
And they finally admitted that was Eric Clapton, right?
Yes, playing guitar. On lead guitar, yes.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. They never liked saying who did anything on their records for some reason.
I don't know.
It was like no notes.
No.
Certainly not much on the White Album.
Well, Billy Preston they did give credits on.
Well, good man, that Billy. It was my first 8-track. Was a Billy Preston 8-track.
Oh. I saw him live with Ringo when he played with the All-Star Band at Jones Beach. So.
Really? So you're a Billy Preston fan?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the band, because that's what we really want to know about. That's actually the way I got in contact with you. I told you, one of my previous guests, who was a dog whisperer, Jeff Colin Jornsen, he came on the show last summer, and he brings in a card from your band. He said, you know, this is somebody who would be a good guest for you. I saw this band, and they were really good. Why don't you give them a call? So here we are, 6 months later.
Well, it's a funny story, Andy, because... when we play, people always ask me, "Wow, how'd you guys get together? How long you been playing? You guys are phenomenal." I said, "You know, at the time, a year, 2 years." I said, "You can't be playing for 2 years." The story is that I got inspired by my two sons who were developing musicians, and they discovered the Beatles, and then they found out that I used to do that when I was younger, 30 years ago. So I hadn't played really. I used to play with my brother Lawrence, my brother's Jeffrey, all in these bands, cover bands. Beatle bands. We played original acts at CBGB's, Max's Kansas City, which is not around anymore. And so it turns out that my boys were so interested in it, by a fluke, we started to play around, and people started to love it. Two of my sons played in the Beatles tribute bands, and we were like, got a lot of great acclaim and stuff, and I was like, wow, this is great. So it sort of rejuvenated us, a new life, just because my sons were so interested in music and they started developing. I says, yeah, I could do this too. They didn't believe me at first.
So, speaking of Max, just these things pop into my head occasionally. One of my guests a while ago, Moogie Klingman, played with Todd Rundgren's Utopia.
Todd Rundgren too.
He told me he went to Max's and he saw Springsteen and Bob Marley and the Wailers in front of 20 people.
Well, we actually played in back of Blondie one time. She was up there, stoned out of her mind, and she was up in front of us, and we came on after her, like, oh, my God, who was that?
I saw her riding a bicycle in a gym, but it's not quite the same thing. Anyway, okay, we're going to play one of your tunes. Now, what song is this?
This is called, from the Help album, The Night Before. It's live.
I've heard of that at some point. Right. So this is... this is a live version. So if the Beatles don't sound the way they do on the record, you'll understand this
is the
live version.
This is no overdubs, no nothing. It's straight live from a basement.
This is John, Paul, George, and Como, basically. We'll be back. Okay, we're back sooner than we thought. We're getting queued up. Betty is queuing around over here. Okay. What else should we talk about? We've got a minute.
Well, I'll tell
you. Your second favorite Beatles song. No.
No.
Okay.
Well, I could tell you what sets us apart from other Beatle tribute bands.
I would like to know that.
Well, I know a lot of bands, they're out there and, you know, they try to look like them and even talk like them and put on all the fancy schmancy stuff.
So what sets you apart is you're nothing like them.
That's right.
Fascinating.
No, we really try to sound authentic. We really try to capture their spirit as they played live. That's what we really do. But more than that, we're transgenerational because we have two young guys.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Two young guys around their
20s. Okay.
And then two
older
guys.
Hey, this is America in the 21st century. Whatever turns you on.
We get all the young kids who like the young guys. We put them up front, and then the older guys we put in the back.
So transgenerational. I like that. Okay, we're ready, Betty? We're queued up? We're rolling. The Beatles, sort of.
Thank you.
That was John, Paul, George, and Ringo here on WNEWF. No, I'm
the
sorry.
PJ
I'm
Day
flashing
Trippers.
Back. The PJ Day Trippers on Centani Broadcasting. That was very good. Very good
Thank
rendition.
You. Thank you very much. And, we pride ourselves on our harmonies and getting the whole package.
The Beatles song with harmonies. Who would have thunk it?
Oh, jeez.
So, now I understand you did a segment on Channel 12 comparing you to the Beatles, actually some sort of technological thing going on.
Yes, we were very honored, actually, to be called into News 12. They actually were doing a segment on the new Beatles Rock Band video, and we were going to test it out against ourselves in the store. I think we went to a PC Richards, and they had the broadcast, and we tested it out, and we sang against the video and stuff, and we did fairly well against it, a high percentage.
94%, as I recall. I actually paid some attention.
That's right, 94%.
You ranked 94% a Beatle, and it says, "Yay, great," is what someone wrote in. I don't know what that means. Thank you if it referred to me, but referred to the band, we'll take that as well as part of the show. Okay, so before we forget, what shows do you guys have coming up that I want people to be able to see you?
Yes, well, I have to say right now, because of the holidays, we're doing a lot of private functions and private shows, so unfortunately the audience
out
there
can't... No one
can come. No.
No one... Leave him alone, folks.
But after the holidays, we will have shows coming up if you go to our sites...
Which is?
MySpace.com, the PJ Day Trippers, or you could see that on Facebook, the PJ Day Trippers. Got to put the in there. And,
so we're basically going on MySpace and Facebook and Facebook. Punching in the PJ Day Trippers.
Right, and you can get all our information from that, yes.
So no upcoming, you're going to make them wait.
Wow,
they're going to make them yearn.
Yeah, they'll see it.
So you stick the young guys up front at your shows, you say?
Yeah, young guys, the girls like that.
I want to know where you stick the young girls.
Well, wherever they want to go, I guess. It doesn't matter to us.
Doesn't sound organized. I want to know where to find the young girls when I want them.
I don't deal with that.
Okay, well, very disappointing. Okay, so...
By the way, our email address is...
Yes, give us that.
thepjdaytrippers@ymail.com. So if you want to contact us, that's where you go.
All right, we're going to talk some more, but I know you would like to get a little plug-in for your son's band. I believe they are listening somewhere in... Is it Providence or something?
I have two sons. One is a senior at Loyola University in Maryland. That's Matthew. I'm going to shout out to Matthew there. And then I also have...
Don't shout. It's very rude.
Okay. And then I also have my son, Andrew, who is a sophomore... Good name. Sophomore at Providence College in Rhode Island. Hi there, Andrew.
Okay, and we're going to play a song, I think, from their band. I think it's called the Matt and Andrew Como Band.
The Matt and Andrew Como Band.
They put a lot of time and thought into that name?
Well, you know, it's tough to pick out names, you know that? So
I would have come up with something for you.
Well, if you do, tell me.
But they have
their own website, mattandandrewcomo.com. And if you go to their website, there's links to MySpace, Facebook, Twitter.
And someone just wrote in that the News 12 show is on MySpace.
That's exactly right, for the PJ Day Trip.
So for people want to see that comparison.
Yes, you can go to that.
You want to see the Beatles compared to the PJ Day Trippers.
Yes, for all your listeners, that you can definitely make the comparison.
Okay, we're going to play the Comos now. Not Perry, but the other ones, and we'll see how it goes.
The song's called Tell Me How.
Not Tell Me Why. But.
That's right.
I wonder about you and me. And how things ought to be. I think about how we live and how I just can't stop this feeling. I think about love and war and everything in between. Up about what I see and where I know I cannot be. I think about this and that and what's to come. I think about everything from right here to miles away. About the world and about you. If it could happen to me, then it could happen to you. Tell me how you can dance along the light of the stars while you hitch a ride on a comet bound for Mars. Tell me how you fell gliding along by Venus and Jupiter while you made your way through the atmosphere. While you made your way through the atmosphere. Tell me how. Tell me how. up right behind me and I think about why we had to say goodbye. I think about what I've done and what I'm supposed to believe about the world and about you. If it could happen to me, then it could happen to you. Tell me how you can dance along the light of the stars while you hitch a ride on the comet bound for Mars. Tell me how you fell gliding along by Venus and Jupiter while you made your way through the atmosphere. While you made your way through the atmosphere. Tell me how. Wiffle ball in the backyard with your best friends till the end of the day. Every day. But for the first time I find you got a color outside the lines. I don't wanna seem like I was wrong. Tell me how you can dance along the light of the stars while you hitch a ride on the comet bound for Mars. Tell me how you fell gliding along by Venus and Jupiter while you made your way through the atmosphere. Tell me how you can dance along the light of the stars while you hitch a ride on the comet bound for Mars. Tell me how you fell gliding along by Venus and Jupiter while you made your way through the atmosphere. While you made your way through the atmosphere. Tell me how. Tell me how. Sing it now, tell me how. Sing it now, tell me how.
Okay, we're back, and we have some feedback. Someone wrote in, sons are cute, how old?
Oh, they've already checked out the website.
This is a guy who's a regular listener who's in Attica at the moment, and he's interested. Oh. No, I think this is a woman, at least now, currently is a woman.
Well, they must be looking at mattandandrewcomo.com.
Okay.
And, because they have clips of all their songs. They are actually releasing a CD December 9th on iTunes. I'm going to get you a package.
I want stuff.
Signed officially by the boys.
I want that.
Yes.
Good.
And they're also having a CD release party December, they got more shows than us.
Okay.
December 30th at Lulu's Village Pub in Port Jefferson.
Port Jefferson.
That's where we got the PJ from and the PJ day trip.
Can we get these people into New York ever? Do you guys play in New York at all?
Oh, we will
we must.
Be.
So that's where
we will be. Yeah,
Jeff Colin Jorgensen must have seen you somewhere.
Yeah, no, we will be.
Okay, because I'll have to do something with you, well, so to speak. But, okay, so what was I going to ask you? Something interesting. Have you ever seen any Beatles shows? Because that's always interesting to me for someone who's a big fan.
Well, yeah, I have seen Ringo and Paul in concert many times, actually. I saw Ringo at Westbury Music Fair in the Round, where you can get real close. That's about as close as I got to a Beatle. And I think I saw him at Jones Beach many times with different all-star bands. He always gets different players. Every
I've seen the two Dead Beatles, so I'm in
you
good
have.
Shape. Well, I saw John show up at that show with Elton John.
Oh, wow.
The famous show where he came up
oh,
and did.
I'll trade you.
Sort of standing
like
there
oh,
and whatever, I guess
man.
It's for the night. Then I saw George at the Garden with Ravi Shankar.
1971?
Oh, no, it was later than that. Okay. It was like somewhere in the early to mid-70s. So I've seen a couple of Beatles.
Have you seen Paul?
No, I haven't.
Is
and I'm he's
phenomenal.
My probably my favorite Beatle.
I've seen him at Citi Field, Madison Square Garden, Nassau Coliseum, and he for a 67-year-old, sorry Paul, can sing better than these 27-year-olds. I'm telling you, he's phenomenal.
Well,
what a
you know,
band.
He's still Paul after all.
Oh, it's incredible.
I mean, I've had a number of guys on the show who are, you know, who are in the same age range as Paul, and they still sound the same. A lot of these guys,
yeah.
You know, always heard on TV the other day, Scott McKenzie, you remember him? He can actually still sing.
Yeah.
He looks
yeah.
like he should be on the back of a motorcycle, but if you're going to San Francisco, I think it was that what he did?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, San Francisco.
If you're going to San Francisco, don't forget to wear some flowers in your hair or something.
Something.
Not you.
Okay.
You can, you know, stick with the traditional look. So, okay, why don't you give us the contact info again for your crew there, because...
Okay, so to see the PJ Day Trippers, you can go to myspace.com, the PJ Day Trippers, or you can see Google on Facebook and get the PJ Day Trippers, or Twitter, the PJ Day Trippers, or you can email us at thepjdaytrippers@ymail.com. And if you want to see the other guys, the young, cute guys,
yes,
the young
doesn't?
Band, mattandandrewcomo.com, they're going to have their CD released on iTunes soon, so you can get a copy. And they're going to have a party, release party, on December 30th at Lulu's Village Pub in Port Jefferson, Long Island. So 8 o'clock show.
Now, you had said that you once met my guest from last week, Sid Bernstein, right? Because Sid's like one of my favorite people. What was that like for you? Did you meet him or he just called you?
No, I met him. Well, he called me first, which I didn't believe it was him at first. I was like, Sid Bernstein. The person who brought the Beatles to America.
And the Stones. And the Rascals.
And the yeah, a lot of people. He says, yeah, no, I saw you. I got your card from a person who saw you guys. Same
thing
with
you. Hear
like
that
you
knew where they had good Italian food? Because that's Sid's, one of his main interests.
You mean Giovanni's?
Sid, yes, Sid loves Giovanni's. He's here all the time when he's on my show.
I know he likes to eat pizza, right?
Pizza, pasta?
Yeah.
Sid is a big eater.
And then I actually met him in person, got the opportunity to meet him in person. He was doing some kind of benefit concert for somebody, and I came along and got to meet him, so it was nice.
Sid's a cool guy, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Very, very cool. I haven't met many famous people. Sid Bernstein and Andy Troy. That's about
Someone
it.
Someone wrote in, I'm there. I don't know what that quite refers to. I don't know if they're still interested in your sons.
Is it the PJ Day
Or if they're in the room at the moment. Is there someone actually here? Do I owe them money?
Oh, I'm there. That must be the Lulu's CD release party. Where else would you go?
Well, I mean, everyone, who's anyone, will be at the...
That's right. You're invited, you know.
Do they play any Beatles songs?
They can play Beatles songs, sure. They play a lot of... I mean, they've introduced me to all the newer bands. So now I'm into that, you know, like... Maroon 5 and...
I still have Styx on my CD
Styx.
Player at home, so... I didn't know music came out after 1990.
You know, they do make music. John Mayer, they're into all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm still listening to, like, you know, the Eagles.
The Eagles.
And this band I'm listening to, this is my band.
Oh,
and we're going out and... We're playing it because I can. It was great seeing you.
I really appreciate you having me on the show.
We'll be back next week with more stuff, but for now, we're gone.
Vero, Centani, 100 years, Rose. And thanks to Johnny Mandolin and Centani Broadcasting for letting us get you involved to remember the Triangle Factory Fire Centennial Memorial this year, 2011.
It's coming up on March 25th, 100 years ago, the fire that happened at the corner of Washington and Green, downtown Manhattan, New York City. 146 workers' lives were lost.
That's right, and mostly young girls, Rose, mostly young Italian and Jewish garment workers. Please come to our website, www.rememberthetrianglefire.org. Get involved and help us make a permanent memorial to these young garment workers and the legacy of workers' safety, immigrant rights.
We need to all remember what came from this fire. Join us March 25th, 2011.
Join Workers United and the Fire Coalition. www.rememberthetrianglefire.org.
Hi, this is Dolores from Vinny's Dino. We love listening to Mark Shoemaker and Mike the Announcer on IYF Radio. Those guys say it like it is.
Hey, waitress, coffee.
Hey, I'm talking here. What's the matter? Didn't your mother feed you? So tune in to IYF Radio on the Shentani Broadcasting Network.
Coffee, coffee.
Be quiet. I'll put a fork in your eye. So listen to Mark and Mike at IYF Radio on the Shentani Broadcasting Network.